Across London, people are running into the wall Taryn is about to describe. Taryn is fictional. The wall is not. This is their story. In Harrow West, chemistry graduates who want to teach are blocked from entering classrooms that need them. The Department for Education and HM Treasury have created a system where teacher training places sit empty while schools report critical shortages in the same subjects. What follows is how that contradiction looks from the inside.
I grew up on the Rayners Lane estate, watching my mum juggle three jobs just to keep us afloat. She was a teaching assistant at the local primary, cleaned offices at night, and did weekend shifts at Tesco. Despite all that, she never missed a parents' evening. She knew education was the way out, and when I got into King's College London to study chemistry, it felt like we had both won something. My Year 10 chemistry teacher, Mrs. Patterson, had made molecular structures feel like puzzles waiting to be solved. I still remember the day she showed us how copper sulfate crystals formed, the way the blue emerged from nowhere, like watching magic happen in real time. That was the moment I knew I wanted to stand in front of a classroom and create that same sense of wonder for other kids. After graduating with first class honours, the path seemed clear. Get onto a teacher training program and start making a difference. In March 2023, I applied to the Institute of Education at UCL. I had everything they asked for: an excellent degree in a shortage subject, relevant work experience from tutoring during university, and genuine passion for teaching. When the rejection letter arrived in May, I assumed it was my application. The letter was brief: "We regret to inform you that the program is full." I tried Middlesex University next. Their admissions team was more helpful over the phone. "I'm sorry," the coordinator told me, "but we've had to reduce our PGCE places this year due to funding constraints from the Department for Education. We normally take 40 chemistry trainees, but we can only offer 25 places this time." She sounded genuinely apologetic. It seemed reasonable. Budgets are tight everywhere. I cast the net wider: Imperial College, King's College, Greenwich, Brunel, Roehampton. Each application took time, effort, references. Each rejection cited the same reason: reduced government bursaries for science teaching, cuts to teacher training funding, smaller cohorts due to treasury constraints. The language varied, but the message was identical: there is no funding. By August, I had been rejected by 7 universities. I started to wonder if I was missing something. My friend Zenaida had faced similar barriers the year before when she tried to train as a physics teacher. She eventually gave up and took a job in the city. "They make it so hard," she said. "It's like they don't actually want science teachers." In September, I decided to collect my final rejection letter from the Institute of Education in person. I needed to understand what I was doing wrong. The building was impressive, all modern glass and steel, but something felt off as I walked through the corridors. Lecture hall after lecture hall stood empty, not just quiet between classes, but completely unused. Chairs stacked, lights off, doors propped open to rooms that looked like they had not seen students in months. I found the admissions office and picked up my letter. The standard language: "Unfortunately, due to reduced capacity." I asked the receptionist about the empty rooms I had passed. She looked around, then leaned forward. "We had to cut our intake by 40% this year," she said quietly. "Treasury won't fund the bursary scheme properly, even though we're crying out for chemistry teachers. We've got 3 lecture halls we're not using and a computer lab with dust sheets over the equipment. It doesn't make sense." That was when the excuse stopped sounding reasonable. The building existed. The equipment existed. The lecturers existed. I existed, along with dozens of other graduates who wanted to train. The schools needed chemistry teachers. Everyone agreed on that. So what exactly was it that there is no money for? I started to see the contradiction everywhere: training places sitting empty, while newspapers ran stories about teacher shortages; graduates like me being turned away while schools recruited unqualified teachers to cover science lessons; buildings designed for education standing half empty, while politicians claimed we could not afford to train the people who wanted to fill them; the government that prints every pound note and mints every coin, was telling me it could not find enough of them to connect willing graduates to desperate schools. That is not an accounting problem. That is a choice dressed up as mathematics. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that issues the currency decided not to issue enough of it to train the teachers its own schools were crying out for. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the classrooms were ready. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a policy wrapped in the language of impossibility. It follows the same logic as a household that says, "We cannot afford it," except households do not create their own currency. The government does. The limit was never the pounds. The limit was the willingness to spend them into the places where they were needed most. I am still here, still watching, still applying. But I understand now that my story is not unique to me or to chemistry or to teacher training. It is the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard was never bare. It was locked.
What Taryn experienced, it has a name: cherry picking. This technique selects the rare examples where spending failed to justify never spending, while ignoring overwhelming evidence of what happens when government does invest. A cherry picker might point to a pharmaceutical trial that showed no benefit and use that to argue against all medical research while ignoring the thousands of treatments that have saved lives. It sounds rigorous, but it is not. It is selective evidence designed to support a predetermined conclusion. In Taryn's case, every rejection letter cited funding cuts as inevitable, as though the evidence overwhelmingly supported them. But what evidence? The Department for Education's own data shows that regions with higher teacher training investment have better recruitment and retention rates. Countries that invest more in teacher education have better learning outcomes. When Treasury and the DfE cut bursary schemes, they ignored this mountain of positive evidence and cherry-picked rare examples of waste to justify the cuts. They responded to the objection, "Look what happened to countries that overspent on public services," by pointing to Greece, which used the euro and could not issue its own currency. Countries that issue their own currency have never defaulted due to domestic spending. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. In Harrow West, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Harrow West ranks 231st out of 543 English constituencies for deprivation. English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency has 656 registered charities, Charity Commission Register. Local organisations received £17.3 million in total grants, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics, produced by Blocked Britain.